multiplied 27 times, 10 times faster than the average yearly wage. But that first Wednesday in May, when commuters gazed west over the widest industrial landscape in the world, they saw something unusual, a clear sky above the prairie horizon. Gone was the cloud of thick smoke that always hung over the city. The only signals of industrial activity came from the tall chimneys of the huge McCormick Reaper Works, 2 miles away, where strikebreakers, guarded by Chicago police, kept the factory in operation. Scores of other plants and shops remained shut down on this fifth day of a mammoth general strike for the 8-hour day that had begun on May 1st. As the black-coated businessmen entered the downtown area, they could see knots of pickets around the soot-blackened warehouses that stretched along State Street all the way up to the Dearborn Station. Striking freight handlers had staunched the flow of interstate commerce through Chicago's immense grid of iron rails. In solidarity, switchmen had refused to switch trains in one central rail yard, crippling the mighty Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy Railroad, the city's largest freight handler. Trains still chugged into the city that day, but when the locomotives reached the depots, they sat idle, stuck on the tracks with unloaded cargoes. Looking back into the rising sun, the businessmen would have seen hundreds of boats riding at anchor in the outer harbor. The captains of side-wheel steamers had banked their boilers, and sailors on lake schooners had struck their sails under orders from the alarmed vessel owners. A vast quantity of wheat and cut lumber awaited shipment, and there were lucrative tons of iron ore and anthracite coal to be unloaded. But the spring shipping season had been ruined by the storm of strikes that had swept over the city. Vessel owners feared for the safety of their ships if they ventured down the South Branch of the Chicago River to unload in the industrial zone because angry strikers, many of them bohemian lumber shovers, had taken over the lumber yards and could, at any moment, put a torch to their wooden boats and the acres of dry lumber nearby. The strike wave even reached outside the city, to the enormous railroad car shops and the model town George Pullman had built to escape the turmoil of Chicago. Seemingly unconcerned with labor unrest in the city and in the town he owned, Pullman arrived for work, as usual, at his palatial company headquarters on Michigan Avenue. Stepping out of a carriage driven by a well-dressed black man who wore his own high hat, the world-renowned industrialist and city builder entered his office building looking as he did every morning, walking purposefully and wearing his usual outfit, a Prince Albert coat, striped trousers, and patent leather shoes. Yet beneath his businesslike demeanor, George Pullman suffered from feelings of uncertainty. "My anxiety is very great," he wrote to his wife, "although it is said that I appear very cool and unconcerned about it." The stunning breadth of the 8-hour strike shocked him. He had constructed his company town 9 miles from industrial Chicago, where poverty and despair had poisoned relations between manufacturers and their hands and caused frequent strikes, lockouts, and riots. In Pullman's model community, carefully selected workmen earned high wages, rented comfortable new houses, and lived a healthy life in a clean place. Now the toxic fumes of class antagonism were wafting through the streets of his planned community. "Some change must occur very soon now," he told his wife, "but I cannot yet predict what it will be." Like George Pullman, other businessmen headed for work on May 5th, just as they always did and with their usual frantic energy. When they arrived downtown, these men always stopped to buy the morning edition of the Chicago Daily Tribune, the self-proclaimed businessman's newspaper. But on this Wednesday, men grabbed the paper eagerly because they had heard rumors about a riot on the west side the night before in which many policemen were hurt, and no one knew with any certainty what had happened. When they read the morning headline, they were stunned because it carried news of an event far worse than any of them imagined. A hellish deed. A dynamite bomb thrown into a crowd of policemen. It explodes and covers the street with dead and mutilated officers. A storm of bullets follows. The police return fire and wound a number of rioters, harrowing scenes at the Desplaines